Thank you very much. Oh, I just left something behind. Sorry, I'll be right with you. I just left something in my bag. No. That. Hello, everybody. For those of you who didn't know that I was speaking today, feel free to go and play on the bouncy castle or leave. For those who did know, I find it significant that there are no less than three pastors in the audience. Forward. I want to talk to you today about a subject called Volunesia. Now, although I'm presenting stuff that I do, please understand this isn't about me. This is a team effort, and more to the point, it's about you. Hands up, anybody in the audience who volunteers their time or talents in any way whatsoever. Can we have a show of hands? I'm preaching to the choir. Let's talk about Volunesia. I personally can vouch for the veracity of this. It's a real thing. It actually happens. Because I personally went from volunteering or doing work because of a sense of self-aggrandizement to doing the work because of what it did for other people. And I know it will happen to you. If you don't volunteer, go ahead and do it. This is something we've known since the pagan times. It was well recognized long before the New or the Old Testament was written down. But in the Old Testament, we are told this is what God wants us to do. This is something that was imprinted into your DNA. Get off your bum and help the guy next to you. Isaiah put it well. I'm not interested in the other sorts of fast. This is the fast that the Lord wants. To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. Isn't your duty not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor that are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him? Do this, and your light will break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth freely, and righteousness will go before you. We are told this is our duty. And if we ever wanted an example to follow, Jesus went around doing good works. And this church has a mission to know and follow Jesus. We should be doing this. I'd like to read to you the parable of the Good Samaritan, because I think, for me personally, it's one of the most important lessons in the entire Bible. Jesus was preaching, and on one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test him. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" Jesus replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." But the lawyer wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus told this parable. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to that place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have had." Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Could you ask for a clearer instruction? Remember, there was a while, for a while, there was a thing for putting up these big billboards at the side of the road with supposedly God speaking to us. This, I thought, was one of the most impactful because it encapsulates a lot of that neighborliness thing that we should know about, we should be thinking about. And we are also told that it is by grace we are saved, and God gave us good works to do. Is it just faith? Is it? Do you have to have faith to do this? There are lots of secular and humanist groups who go about doing good works. But we know that this is part of our Christian duty. If we are professing Christians, we don't really have a choice. You demonstrate your faith by doing the good works. You're not going to get into heaven because you did good works. You're not going to get into heaven because you had Christian parents who prayed for you, or because you obeyed certain rules or edicts. The only way you can get into heaven is by faith, and that through the grace of God. But if you have faith and you are a recipient of grace, it is your duty to perform the good works. We all know what the world offers us. You can read the top for yourself. But what we want to see as Christians are the fruits of the Spirit. These things, and I would draw your attention particularly to kindness. How hard is it to be kind? How much does a good word cost? How much does that phone call to the hurting friend cost? Or taking around some food to a family that's starving? Or sending a check for $30 to the Good Samaritans to support a kid who's the victim of home abuse? Mother Teresa is an example to all of us in terms of what she did in supporting the poor. And if you scull around on the internet, you'll find all sorts of wise sayings of Mother Teresa. This one I thought really impressed me. Nobody's asking you to start a soup kitchen on your own or to single-handedly support a mission. But if everybody does their own bit, we can make things a lot better. You'll see sites like this all over the world. And I think it's a remarkable thing that in every community, people will do their best to support those less fortunate. People will set up feeding stations. But it's interesting that the world sometimes doesn't see things the way that the Good Samaritan sees them. This is a story I came across that happened in North Carolina. Picture the scene. Raleigh is a very nice modern city. There is a central park. You can feed the homeless in the park, but you have to pay $800 for a permit. For 6 years, this church has been raising money to feed the homeless on the sidewalk outside the park. The mayor decided, at the request of the local merchants, that this was lowering the tone of the area. These people were peeing on the buildings, they were unsightly, shoppers were avoiding the area because the homeless would congregate on a Sunday morning to be fed. So he sent the police force, because as you know, the police are employed by the city council, and they were threatened with arrest if they were to feed the homeless. The solution was you can take it indoors, sort of out of sight, out of mind, if you can hire a hall somewhere to feed them, or you can buy a permit for the park. Unfortunately, this approach has caught on. And there are now signs like this in Florida. Because of a lot of the states in winter becomes extremely cold, a lot of the homeless tend to move down to the warmer areas, and Florida is a big holiday destination, so a lot of the towns aren't interested in having the homeless. So there are literally signs like this. But perhaps this should be our response. Fortunately, we have a somewhat more generous approach in our city. We have a number of food banks and a number of supporting institutions. And I'm not prescribing any course of action. I'm merely saying, let your conscience prick you. What are you doing for those less fortunate than yourself? We have a church which is multicultural, multiple skills, multiple levels of godliness, of faith, of duty, of income. We also have a number of ways in which we are involved, and I'm proud to be part of this congregation that is so involved in this community. We seek to know and follow Christ, and insofar as we do that, we model him, and we shine like a light or salt to the community. If you're not involved in one of those, here's your chance. I came across this as a recommendation for building a happy church. Identify your spiritual gift and communicate or deliver or work or donate or volunteer within the confines of that spiritual gift. If you have a gift for teaching, do ESOL teaching. If you have a gift for healing, heal. Christians in what they call sad church see serving as a burden because they're serving out of a sense of guilt. I really need to do something because I'm a Christian. I'm really not a teacher, but I'll go along and teach anyway. That becomes a burden. Teach where your gifts lie or do what your gifts dictate to you. Churches all around the world, just like ours, have started community service groups of one sort or another. This is one run by a Catholic group of sisters in a convent. This is another where a Christian home repair ministry was set up. They raise funds and they go around and they repair the widow's roof, or they'll put insulation into a home or something of that sort. In our own city, there are all sorts of ways people get involved and do good works, and I think these are all admirable and to be emulated. Big deal. I'm a plastic surgeon. What can a plastic surgeon do? After all, we're supposed to be all about the money, aren't we? As a recent business lunch I was at said, one of the guys who'd come to speak to us about some new marketing initiative said to me, "You want to drive a Ferrari, don't you? You know, if you do what we're doing, you'll have one." And I know several colleagues who have Maseratis and similar cars. Most people's perception of what plastic surgery is generated by this type of thing. In the same sense that most people who aren't Christian have a perverted idea of what a Christian is and does. What about TV shows like this? But really, when it comes down to the sort of work that I've become involved in over the years, it really is love in action, just as much as feeding the homeless or helping with a budget plan for the financially challenged. All credit to this guy on the left. Daryl Hodgkinson is a chap that I met who is a highly successful plastic surgeon working out of Double Bay in Sydney, where he runs a very, very high-end practice and does drive a Maserati. But full credit to him, 20 years ago he said, "I need to give something back," and he started Operation Restore Hope Australia. He and his wife used to run a mission to Manila and one down to Cebu in the Philippines, and I got invited along on one of these. At that time, we're talking about the late 1990s, I'd been in New Zealand about 3 years, and I was still very determinedly a participant in the rat race. I wanted a Ferrari. As far as I was concerned, you operated faster than anyone else, you did better work than anyone else, you got more plaudits than anyone else, and you would get to be the big dog in the yard. But the rat race is a trap. And it took me the very near loss of my marriage and my family to realize that there is more to life than working every hour that God sent you and trying to outdo the next guy. It wasn't so much about doing the best you could for the patient as doing the job better than the guy that you were competing with. Who published the most papers wins. But I came to realize that only a rat can win a rat race. And there's more to life than being a rat. We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give. Nobody ever got poor by giving. Anyway, I went on one of these Operation Restore Hope trips because I was the new young gun in town and I was doing good work in cleft lip and palate surgery and I was prepared to go along and donate my time. And I really enjoyed pediatric plastic surgery. You get to stick knives in irritating children. So, the need was palpable. Remember that the Philippines is a country with over 500,000 unoperated clefts. In New Zealand, you never see somebody walking around with a cleft because within 24 hours of a child being born with a cleft, there will be a surgeon at the bedside and the child's future is planned. The first operation happens at 3 months, but already they're having pre-surgical orthodontics. The second operation at 9 months. By the time these kids hit school, they look like any other kid. Whereas in the Philippines, there are adults walking around and children who have unoperated clefts. Let me ask you guys a question. Do you remember when you were teenagers? Your life could be destroyed by having a pimple on the night of the big dance. Imagine what it's like having a cleft lip and being 12 years old in a society as we know it today. These are the sorts of kids that we're presenting to us. These aren't babies who have no self-awareness. These are kids trying to fit into a society. In addition to that, the Philippines is an interesting society. They're about 85% Roman Catholic. But it's a very intense form of Roman Catholicism. And I'm not judging it, but a number of families have said to me, we felt terribly guilty when we had this child because there was a perception that in some way we had sinned and earned this. We tried to procure an abortion or something like that. So the kid was stuffed away in a cupboard. I've got one little girl I'll show you who had never been to school. And we met her when she was 13. It's a simple problem to solve. All it needs is money, skill, time, and love. You've got to be motivated to do this because you're not paid for it. You work really, really hard. But it's like a busman's holiday. Because you come back physically exhausted but emotionally on a high. And any of you who volunteer will know exactly what I'm getting at. Grant will tell you he gets the same feeling out of a Habitat for Humanity build. You work really hard, but it's a great feeling. The girl on the left is Mila. Now, she's one of a group of Filipino ladies who are fortunate enough to be financially well off. Most of these women have married expatriate businessmen, and they spend their time doing good works. Mila comes to every Operation Restore Hope mission, and she helps and assists and takes kids, for example, who need orthodontics. And she will sponsor them to a private orthodontist to have the work done so that next year when we come back, we can do the surgery. She is truly an angel, and she's one of about a dozen women who support the work. These are the sorts of challenges we have. Now, as a surgeon doing this work routinely, I love this sort of challenge. It's the kind of thing that a landscape gardener might feel when he sees a jungle and he's going to transform it. It's enormously exciting and rewarding in and of itself. Sometimes we have to work with really decrepit equipment, and the spaces we work in are often less than ideal. Don't think the operating theatres you've seen on Shortland Street or something like that. Think about a converted shack. One of our nurses is a big fan of Shortland Street, and she put up a sign at one theatre we were working in. You're not in Guatemala now, Dr. Robata. But it was very much like that. The Filipinos are to be admired for the love and care they take of their kids. These are little girls on their way to school, and they each look as polished as a new pin in their little uniforms. You never see a dirty child, no matter how poor the circumstances. When these kids come to the clinic, they are polished to within an inch of their lives. They are absolutely adored. But these are some examples. With enough time and work, you can go from that to that, from that to that. They are very religious people. And I was talking to Lauren a while ago about this trip that we do. Is it a form of evangelism or isn't it? And she said to me, do you know, evangelism cuts both ways. And I have to say, she's a very wise woman, my wife, it certainly cut this way for me. Because I started going on these trips as a confirmed atheist. I now go on these trips as a confirmed evangelist. Because I believe I was evangelized by the patients and the families that I worked with. When a mother says to you, I prayed to God for my child and he sent you, it gets amongst you. Just walking into the hospital on one of the notice boards, this was written up. Religion is something people live, and these people live this. This is how your day-to-day runs. You, as well-seasoned Christians, take this for granted. For me, walking in as an atheist, I thought, that's interesting. Sure I can. This was a prayer written up on a board. It says, for all the things that you receive, give thanks. God appreciates a grateful heart. In all the things you do, put love, for God treasures a loving heart. Both rain and sunshine give life to a plant. Both smiles and tears enrich your life. So thank God for whatever comes, may it be happy or sad. This is the girl I was telling you about who had never been to school. Now, if you think about your top jaw, you've got a left arch and a right arch and a central bit like the keystone of an arch. When you have a cleft lip or palate, they're not joined together, and that central bit grows out so the two behind it can collapse inwards. And if you try and do a repair at this age, there's nowhere for that central segment to go. So here she is. Oops, let's go back. And what we need to do before we do anything else is get an orthodontic appliance in and jack those two side parts out. So we needed somebody to foot the bill for that, and Mila put her hand up. And that took about 18 months to create enough space for us to bring that central segment up there back into that space. And there she is after the big operation. So you've gone from 2005 to 2007. And there she is at the age of about 17. And she's just had some minor work done around her nose. That's the blood staining there. But she's got a job. She's learned to read and write. She has a life. From being kept at home where she was basically an unpaid servant to having a life. And that cost all of $500 and a bit of time and effort. Here's a little kid with a complete cleft. And there she is afterwards. And there's another one. And these kids are absolutely gorgeous. Oh, this little girl is one of my favorites. She became a poster child for our sister organization, Operation Restore Hope Germany. She's on a lot of their advertising and fundraising appeals in Germany. And this kid, she's just as cute as a barrel full of monkeys. She came to clinic with this pair of funny bunny ears, and she was on everybody's lap and posing with this V sign. I have no idea what the V sign was for, but as far as she's concerned, that was the pose you adopted. That's her and her mum, and she was all over everyone. She's just delightful. This is a lovely story too. This is Nick. Nick is a young kid of about 11 when we first met him. With him is a missionary who is working in his village at the far southern end of the Philippines. They raised funds, because Nick was in the village, to fly Nick and the missionary and his older sister all the way up to Manila to one of our missions. So that's Nick when we first met him. He's got a very wide cleft. That's a real challenge to try and put together. And there's almost no tissue in the center to work with. Nevertheless, we managed to get a repair. And he came back the next year because there was a bit of minor work to be done. But he was suddenly a real teenager. He's got attitude. He's feeling self-confident. He's out there, you know, socializing. And about a year later, we got sent this picture. of Nick with his family. So, you know, you change lives with this stuff. This young girl, Corazon, which incidentally means heart, had a neglected patent ductus, which is a problem of plumbing in the heart when she was born. It was never repaired, and because of this faulty plumbing, she's had high-pressure blood flowing through her lungs all her life, so they've become fibrosed. So she is probably going to die before she's 30 because she didn't have surgery when she was a kid. But she's got this dreadful cleft, but an amazingly bubbly personality. Well, we said to her, look, we can't put you to sleep to do this because it's just too dangerous. You may not wake up. But what we can do is repair the lip under local anesthetic. So we did that. Because of her teeth, you can see how the teeth are turned there, we arranged a sponsorship to send her off to get braces. So we repaired the lip, we arranged sponsorship, she got her teeth repaired. The orthodontist was so impressed with her that he gave her a job as his receptionist. It changes lives. My friend Christopher, who lives in Leipzig in Germany, one of God's absolute gems. What a fine man. He, because he lives in Germany, and Germany's a very wealthy country, they raise heaps of money, so he pays the lion's share of these trips. He's delighted to see. But as he says to me, I must have the original receipt. I must have the original receipt. In Germany, you need the paper. So, well, apart from going to the Philippines, we decided we'd do something different one year. So we had seen, when I was traveling on Emirates, that they supported a floating hospital in Bangladesh. So I wrote to Emirates and I got the name of the woman who ran these hospitals and I said, could we bring a trip? And, you know, yes, we'd love you to come. So we wound up going to Bangladesh 18 months ago now. And it's an incredibly long way to travel because once you've arrived in Dhaka, you've then got to fly down to Cox's Bazaar and drive on the worst roads you can imagine to the shore of the Gulf, and you take a little lifeboat out to the floating hospital. So this is Dakar on a good day, and we never saw it looking quite that pretty. But interesting enough, when we went, there had just been a spate of attacks on Western tourists and Western workers, and two had been shot dead, another one was killed while we were in the air. So we had a police presence taking care of us, worried about us. Anyway, for the engineers amongst you, that's the communication wiring in the streets of Dakar. So you wonder why anything actually works. A lot of it didn't. A lot of it is very low-lying, and it's prone to flooding. And when it floods, often the islands or the banks on which these villages stand will just be completely washed away. The poverty is startling. It's also a very interesting society because it's 90% Muslim. And the perception from just arriving and looking around was that there was huge segregation between men and women. Women were very much second-class citizens. And I'll show you what I mean in a couple of places. This is driving along. You can see proverbial poverty, little shanty buildings, lots of paddy fields. The woman who ran these hospitals is Runa Khan, and this quote from her says, I seek a day when only natural differences will distinguish women, not the created social differences. Our strength lies in our complementary differences. Women make up half of mankind. What a loss for humanity if equal chances are not given to them. Now, she has started an organization called Friendship, which is involved in education, teaching moral values, offering health care and offering advice on agricultural practices. And it's a huge organization. Amongst other things, they run two hospital ships, and we went to one of these hospital ships. It's an interesting arrival. This is Cox's Bazaar. That's a crashed aeroplane that's just left as a sort of monument and an example to others. It doesn't instill much confidence in the local regional airline, though. This is Ian Clark, who's one of our volunteers. He's an anaesthetic technician who works down central New Zealand. And the other is Cheryl, my nurse, who goes with me on these trips. When we arrived at the wharf for embarkation, there was a crowd there, but not a single woman amongst them. They were all men. Anyway, we mount up onto one of these little lifeboats, and all our gear gets put onto that, and off we go to the hospital ship. Now, some of you may recognize that. To my amazement, that's Greenpeace 2, which was donated to Friendship and converted into a hospital ship. So I've actually been on Greenpeace. I was rather chuffed at that. This is the ship. Now, that's the sort of stern castle, and in there are the cabins and everything else. This tent, this blue tent, is just a tarpaulin over two ropes, and that's going to be the hospital ward. Here you are looking along that ward, there are little beds lying here, and you're looking through the end of it. That's a better view of it there. You can see you're looking back towards that stern castle, and these are the beds. So the patients would be stretched out on these beds. Now, the second night we were there, there was a tropical thunderstorm, and the place was drenched. So they brought everybody into the corridors in the stern castle. There were people lying on each other's laps. It was knee-deep in patients and their supporters. Anyway, we got one little room to put all our stuff in, and the next door cabin, honestly, it was the size of a generous toilet, was going to be our operating theatre. So here are the people arriving on their boat, and they're beautifully dressed in all these coloured cottons. And they get processed on the deck of the ship. That blue tarpaulin thing will be over here, and that's the stern castle. And here we are operating in this little cabin. There's one operating table there. There's a table in the middle, and there's another operating table, and the two anaesthetists are having a conversation. You don't see that in New Zealand often. As one of my colleagues who left Operation Restore Hope said, I hope one day to see you in another sweaty armpit of a theatre somewhere. And it was like that. It was incredibly hot and sticky. But because they do most of their cooking over open fires, most of the injuries we saw on that trip were not clefts, they were burns. Children would sleep around the fire and roll over during the night into the fire or be running around playing and trip and fall into the fire. So we operated on about 30 patients on that trip, and of those, at least 20 would have been burns or burn scars. So this little girl has got burns on her face, and you can see she can't fully open her mouth because she's constricted by the scarring. Here's a kid who got burnt on the ankle, and as typical with scarring like this, it just contracts and distorts the foot, making ambulation really difficult. So most of these, you'd be cutting them open to get the range back and putting in a skin graft. This poor kid had a disease called Noma. Those of you who have ever worked in Africa would know that Noma is a disease of malnutrition and infection, which just eats flesh. Flesh-eating bacteria have got nothing on this. Clearly, somebody else had put in some tissue once before, but the mouth was completely distorted, so we had to rebuild that mouth and reconstruct that nostril. And here are the patients on the deck. You can see it's still overcast. This is just after the storm. Trying to associate with these children was difficult. They weren't like the Filipino kids, which are friendly and happy and will go to anyone. These kids are terribly reserved and shy and shut down. The girls had more success talking to these kids, but for any of us men, they really didn't relate to us at all. So, I have a couple of questions for you. If this kind of work is being done by people who have the time and the skill and the energy to do it, there is so much out there that can still be done by the rest of us who have the time and the skill. You are asked to volunteer just your time. What about your time, your skills, your treasure? Will you volunteer? Most of you already volunteer, and good on you. This is something that I came across that I would like to aspire to. I'm not there yet, but this is my goal. One good man, one man who does not put on his religion once a week with his Sunday coat, but wears it for his working dress, and lets the thought of God grow into him and through him until everything he says and does becomes religious. That man is worth 1,000 sermons. He is a living gospel. He comes in the spirit and the power of Elias. He is the image of God. And men see his good works and admire them in spite of themselves, and see that they are godlike, and that God's grace is no dream, but that the Holy Spirit is still among men, and that all nobleness and manliness is his gift, his stamp, his picture. And so they get a glimpse of God again in his saints and heroes, and glorify their Father who is in heaven. Let that be the evangelism that we as Greyfriars espouse. Let the light of your life shine in such a way that others see your good deeds and bring glory to your Father in heaven. Matthew 5:16. Do what you can with what you've got where you are. God bless you all, and thank you for your attention. Thank you.